interview with Bill Snead.
If we could start, and you could just give me a summary of your background, education, and how you came into the Saturn program, and your relationship with the Saturn V program office, mm-hmm. or Saturn Systems office, too. Were you involved in that?
Yeah, with the Saturn program office.
Yeah, so why don't you just go ahead and take a running start at it then.
Okay, well, I guess, as I see it, you know, programs kind of come in three phases. It's the group who kind of does the basic work and kind of gets the program off the ground, and that's the initial contingent of people. And of course, that was the Saturn Systems Office, I guess, under Dr. Longhi.
Right.
And he was, I guess, involved in the program, I guess, up until about 1962 or 1963, somewhere in that time frame. At which time, of course, the real emphasis started to develop on the Apollo program. The decrees were made that we were going forward with the Apollo program, and pretty hard milestones were established. And it was decided at that time that we would have to shift our emphasis and kind of get with it, so to speak. Apparently, the center management took a look at the organizational structure and the so forth that we had in existence at that time, and did elect to form a new organization which significantly increased the emphasis on program management. Up until that time, we had been principally, let's say, a dirty hands type operation, very heavily in-house oriented. We had developed the Jupiter in-house. We had developed the S-1B stage for the Saturn 1 vehicle in-house, and had done most of the engineering and conceptual type work, even on the entire launch vehicle. We had...
we manufactured the first 8 S-1.
That's right, yeah. That's right. So that's the dirty hands approach that I'm referring to. And then on the S-1C, of course, we had undertaken to actually design, develop, manufacture, I believe, the through the first two flight articles in-house with support from the Boeing company. And then, of course, that was to have been transferred out of house effective with the 503 vehicle. Now, in order to get that increased emphasis, the center changed from more or less a laboratory, structurally oriented organization to three basic organizations to get that balance that I was talking about. They had the program management organization, and the systems engineering organization, which contained all the laboratories, and then, in essence, your administration organization under Mr. Newby.
Okay, excuse me, this was about 1963.
This was in the 1962-63 time period, and I can't recall exactly when that was. And, of course, Bob Young, I believe it was called in from Aerojet.
Could I interrupt you
a
moment? Now, what was the rationale for bringing in someone from outside? Did this kind of come from headquarters? I had the impression that there was pressure.
It's my understanding that there might have been a little pressure brought to bear there to increase this emphasis and to make sure that we had the proper emphasis, but let's say a good balance of emphasis on the program management as well as the engineering.
Okay.
I've heard it said that Mr. Webb was, you know, a very strong advocate and had certain goals and objectives of being recognized as one of the best managers in the country. I wanted NASA to be recognized as such, and I'm sure that this reflected some of his personal thinking.
Okay, then part of it might have been the fact that he viewed Marshall as being kind of a dirty hand operation up to at least this point, say 63, and that by bringing in a sort of a top industrial manager from the outside, it would help the IO group.
The IO group,
yeah.
I guess, was
get started in a better fashion.
Yeah. Of course, we were shifting, you know, that we were starting to let, in fact, contracts even at that time had been let to industry for the, I guess, the S4 stage. And I believe Chrysler might have been on board. I'm not sure on the S1. I think they were. Boeing had been selected, you know, for the S1C. And, of course, at that time, we had not selected the instrument unit contractor. But the emphasis, the program was growing at such a rate that we were really shifting more and more work out of house, you know, and less in-house. And, of course, the decision to do this, I think, was, you know, kind of looking ahead instead of any reflection on perhaps, you know, any, it was certainly no non-performance on the part of the center or anything like that. I think it's just a matter of saying, hey, we're going more out of house. It's going to take a little different type of organization to handle that. And I believe, surely, that was the main thrust of the reorganization.
But Young was not here for much more than a year, was he?
Young was here for approximately a year, as I recall. I don't, that's either a year or 2 years. Now, I can't really be certain on that. But it was certainly a short period of time.
And then they brought in O'Connor.
And then O'Connor came in, and he must have been here at least 4 years or so.
Now, could you comment on the rationale for that? Was there any...
Well, I think certainly that in setting up the new organization, they wanted a person who was familiar, of course, with the industrial side of things, and I'm sure that they were going after the a person who understood that and was trying to get within then the industrial operations group the learning, the guidance and direction that would help steer that effort, trying to get a proper balance between a group who had been doing and perhaps had a tendency to overtell the contractor how to do the job instead of what the job was. And I'm sure that they were just getting the best. Well, you know, the vice president of a company, of course, or an industry would be the logical candidate that you had. We had no industrial tycoons necessarily in-house. So I think it was decided, you know, to try to get that kind of emphasis in. And to me, it was a rather profound decision to make, because Dr. Longhi, you know, had kind of headed that activity up, but he was one of, you know, the in-house types, the dirty hands types himself, very heavily scientific-oriented, I understand. Art Rudolph, who I guess would be the closest thing that Marshall had to that kind of person, because I think he had been in charge of the production phase of the V1 or V2, I guess it was, project.
Yeah.
And he had been, you know, quite experienced in that. Plus, he had been exposed to industry via his prior assignments on the Jupiter program, or Redstone. Redstone, I guess.
And he was involved in Pershing too.
And he was project manager for that. And of course, he had a lot of experience, you know, in dealing with industry on those programs, and certainly knew the in-house activities. So I really think he, you know, really had the qualifications for it. But at that time, he was on assignment to manned spaceflight. He was in one of the field offices, the systems engineering field offices, located here at Huntsville.
Well, he was here in Huntsville.
Yeah, we were located here at
Huntsville. I knew he was with OMSF, but I didn't understand that he was still.
We worked for Joe Shea, who was located in Washington at the time. And Dr. Shea had two field offices, one at here and one at Houston. Now, we were located out at the Hick Building during that period of time. I think something like 18 months, 2 years, something like that.
Well, it's not my intention to get into personalities, really, but the change from Young to O'Connor, you know, seems to me should something be said about it. And was O'Connor a likely prospect because they felt he had the Air Force contracting experience? Or, and by the way, if you want to make an off-the-cuff comment or... not for attribution, you can do that.
I'm not sure that I had privy to all the thoughts that went into that. I don't know whether it was I can't recall specifically whether General Phillips had been selected, you know, during Bob Young's tenure or not. Of course, General Phillips, I'm sure, was selected, you know, probably across all spectrums, of whether it be at industry or the Air Force, a large systems-oriented program manager.
I said O'Connor, I meant Phillips.
General Phillips was in Washington, and that had nothing, you know, Bob Young was located here,
yeah.
So there was no interplay between that. But the point I was trying to lead up to is that if Phillips had been selected during that period of tenure when Bob Young was here, then of course Phillips, you know, could have been a very heavy influence in selection of the next man to come in, and perhaps, you know, having come from the Air Force Systems Command, and kind of knowing the kind of problems we're confronted with, perhaps it was, you know, it could have been that influence that maybe shifted towards the Air Force Command versus, let's say, industry. I don't think I should comment beyond that. I have some views. I have some personal views, some personal observations, but it's just based on my own assessment. I think it could be totally wrong. It could be totally misleading, and I'd rather not even speculate on why that decision might have been made. I would be the first to say that I think it was a good decision. I think General O'Connor brought with him a background in systems management. He brought with him, I think, almost a perfect personality which fit the scheme of things. In other words, he provided an excellent transition, I thought, or if you will, a means of communications between a group who, for years and years, who had been doing it and had a tendency to want to tell a contractor how to do it, and industry who had never, some of which had never been subjected to any penetration. You know, you give me a contract, give me the dollars, and I'll see you 5 years from now with a product attitude. And that was a hell of a span in there. O'Connor's his personality, his makeup, was just almost perfect for helping bridge that gap. He was an easygoing person, very persistent, of course, in a very quiet way, very patient in, you know, understanding and resolving this transition. And I think I think he, you know, the decision to do that was very, very, very significant. Now, Bob Young was a little bit more dynamic. Mm-hmm. And he spent quite a bit of time on the West Coast, perhaps as much out there as back here. And I think from his own, you know, where he could bring his own influence to bear, you know, obviously he did an outstanding job. But the job at hand, I think, was one of kind of bringing all the troops along, you know, to understand that transition and to get everyone working in the environment and with the ground rules that he was trying to, you know, the direction in which he was trying to steer us. He was doing a little bit more himself than getting done through the efforts of others, this job. And again, I don't think that was necessarily a reflection, but it was a very apparent difference between the two personalities that we're discussing. And I think for the situation at hand, General Phillips, I don't know, he just seemed to be the happy medium. It was a very, very effective arrangement. Now, General O'Connor, of course, that made it extremely easy for General Phillips, because either Phillips was on before or after, but they spanned about the same period of time, as I recall. Of course, they talked the same language. They were indoctrinated in, obviously, the same school of learning and experience, and that certainly provided us with an excellent rapport with the Apollo Program Office in Washington under General Phillips. Now, one can speculate on several other aspects of the thing, and I would just mention them, but certainly not comment on them. I don't know whether there was difficulties, you know, with, let's say, the Apollo program director, which is the Washington office, was a problem of that fella, General Phillips, wanting to, let's say, get a responsive type person here to him, which, you know, the two-star general and the one-star general arrangement kind of automatically took care of. I don't know whether there's any problems with that or not. It was not apparent to me, but you know, it could have been a factor in the decision, if I'm making myself clear.
Did they operate in those relationships, or at least in the NASA organization and the MSSC organization? They operated, though, basically as civilian-type managers.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Were they just on kind of on leave from the Air Force, or on loan, as it were?
I don't know what you would call it, but both, you know, were wearing civilian clothes. They were working hours, and I guess you would just say on loan to NASA from the Air Force. Just on the special occasions did they have to wear the uniforms. And it was a very, to me, of course, they were the very best, you know, in To me, it was an excellent relationship.
Well, getting back to the old Saturn Systems office and the new, and I realized there was another thing in there when the Saturn V came in, really under the SSO, but basically the difference between the SSO and the Saturn V program office was basically the SSO still maintained a stronger kind of dirty hand thing, and the Saturn V program office had a much more managerial flavor to it.
No, I would say that there's probably more difference than that. The SSO, Dr. Longhi, of course, had the unenviable task of trying to impose program management over an engineering organization.
Okay.
And he was not, let's say, overly supported, and from all I could gather, overly supported is not, let me say that's not the right word, that Dr. Van Braun and Dr. Rees were development, engineering-oriented people. In other words, their thought pattern was more to get the job done right, no failures, and that sort of thing. Well, that's not exactly conducive to getting a job done on time and within dollars, certain constraints. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Longhi, of course, with a major emphasis on a doing organization, the line organization was all engineering. I mean, it was laboratories. And, you know, it goes without saying that under such a setup, I mean, your line organization is going to prevail. And it was a very painful process to impose on that structure a discipline or a forcing function which made things happen in a certain manner, or which was an orifice between those people who felt deeply responsible for the job, even though it was contracted. They almost shared in responsibility. In fact, there was I guess even more motivation and sense of responsibility here than there was perhaps on the contractor, because
I've heard that name. Yeah.
Yeah, and then to try to insert yourself between that type of person and a contractor who might just be hiring people in quantities, not necessarily motivated at that point in time, then obviously, you know, if a guy wanted to tell him to do something, and the program manager sitting there and say, well, wait a minute, you know, I've got a contract. I've got to have money if I'm going to tell him to do that, and you're telling him to do that is a thing that would delay my schedule by a period of time, was, as you might well imagine, a very sensitive issue. And obviously, I think had something to do, perhaps, you know, with decisions to reorient, perhaps the emphasis that we had, so you get a little better balance between the management and, the engineering.
Well, that was the reason why. Then I keep getting this, that Rudolph emphasized that his staff people were on the same, had the same managerial muscle as the project managers.
Yeah, I'll get to that
okay.
aspect of
yeah.
it in a minute. I'm not down to that level. Back to the Longhi, let's say Bob Young thing, the industrial operations versus the Saturn Systems Office thing. There was few people in Longhi. Longhi did not have a large office. He might have had 100 to 200 people to try to manage all of the activities at that time. It was relatively small, and in my judgment, I don't think we're of the experience or quality levels required to manage billion-dollar programs. And with this change, of course, Saturn Systems office went from something like a 100, 200 man organization to a 1,000 man organization over a period of time. And we put quantity and, in my judgment, more quality, more experience into the management of those programs, like bringing Dr. Rudolph back to manage the Saturn V. He had managed very, very successfully two major programs before, and as I did, had indicated, was probably amongst the most experienced and most qualified of anyone at Marshall to manage a major effort. He was, I think, maybe even unchallenged in that capacity.
I can't remember the other managers. Did they come from within Marshall, or were they brought in from other areas?
We had three major blocks under that industrial operations group. There was the Saturn program, which was headed by Dr. Rudolph.
Then Lee James was over 1 and 1B at one time.
I was trying to remember whether Bob Lindstrom still had 1B at that time. I believe Lee came in subsequent to the this. I'm pretty sure that he did. Bob Lindstrom, I think, had the other office for a while, and of course Bob left to go to industry, and Lee James then came in to assume responsibility for the Saturn 1B, and then we had the engine program office under Bill Brown. Now, all of the program managers were selected, you know, internally. Lindstrom kind of came up through the ranks. I think he got his first exposure here, perhaps through the military, if I'm not terribly mistaken, and, you know, military assignment here, and then stayed on, and was in just an outstanding manager, in my judgment. And, he is now, I think, deputy manager of the shuttle program office. And, of course, Lee James, you know, was principally military. I think he had retired from the military, and I believe Lee was on assignment up with Dr. Reese in some kind of a special capacity at that time, and later, then when Lindstrom left, came down to assume responsibility for the Saturn 1B. Mm-hmm. Now, those people, there was, I might add, a very significant decision made by Dr. Von Braun, and I guess a very painful decision made by Dr. Von Braun at that time, in establishing these program offices. He truly named them number one. They were the final decision on all matters relative to the program, technical and programmatic. That is a charter which Dr. Longy never enjoyed. Under Dr. Longy, of course, the technical decisions prevailed. With the establishment of this new setup, and again, I think it was commensurate with the time. You know, Dr. Von Braun, I mean, it was about this same time we made our selection of the mode in which we were going to the moon, the yellow wire mode, as opposed to the direct or EOR. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the time was set, and dollars started to gel, and, you know, things had to happen on time. Now, up before that, we were in kind of an open-ended environment. In other words, no hard commitments to make. You know, under those conditions, you should do it as he was doing it. And I think, of course, Von Braun was one of the most brilliant managers and engineers and systems engineers that I have ever come in contact with. And I think he realized that he had to shift and get this balance, in his structure here. So he issued, and I believe it was called Management Instructions Number 1. I did for a while even still have a copy of it because it was one of those things you hang on the wall. Was a major decision to say that the program manager will have the final say on all matters pertaining to his program. Up until that time, it was not that way at all. The program managers were almost implementers instead of managers of those decisions. Mm-hmm. So I have to register the decision to get that balance, and then the decision to give them the authority and responsibilities commensurate with those assignments. I have to put those kind of right up in the key decision category, personally.
You said it was painful. That means Von Braun had a natural reluctance to let things kind of go to other people? I mean,
he was innovative.
Yeah.
And certainly our labs were innovative. And I think it was a situation of putting an orifice in to that innovation and saying no to it occasionally or frequently. Saying no to it. Well, that is a pretty painful thing.
No to the labs. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no to the labs. In other words, up until that time, they wanted to make it round or square. They said, make it round or make it square. And the program manager says, contractor, make it square. That's what the lab said. And I'll go out and see if I can find the dollars to do it.
But in this case,
the lab would say, make it round or make it square, and then it would come to Dr. Rudolph, and he'd say, well, now let me see the impact of making it round or making it square. And if he said making it round instead of square would cause me to delay a program 6 months, or it required me $10 million, which I don't have, and I don't consider the risk of not making it that way to be significant, then my decision is to leave it as it is, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's the traumatic change in mode of operation. And it is in that connection that I say that it's a little bit painful, because Von Braun's major organization was innovative-oriented, and here he had to impose, in order to accomplish the objectives of the Apollo program, he had to impose this control over those people, and obviously that was a painful process.
Now, that's very interesting. I, you know, I really hadn't heard it from that viewpoint before. That's very interesting, yeah. So this is the import of the national overall program and the requirements for scheduling and costing and funding and all that.
That's right. I mean, you really started doing program management and systems management instead of, you know, just with the emphasis totally on the technical aspect. Now, this put a lot of pressure on the program manager, to say the least, because, you know, you don't change that attitude or that mode of operation overnight. And we had to do an awful lot of deliberation on all of our significant decisions. And of course, Ben Brown, being astute, left the channel open that that should a lab director, let's say, take, let's say, a violent exception to a decision that was rendered by a program manager. He had an appeal authority back to Ben Brown, and Ben Brown would hear the case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we used that a time or two. And fortunately for us, on one or two of the real early decisions that we had to make, we had done our homework well, and we won our case. Well, that, you know, then the tendency to want to do that dropped off. But it was always open. And of course, we were sensitive to that. And we were, you know, we knew that when we were making a decision over the lab directors, that we were assuming the responsibility, you know, for the thing working in the context. So you don't take those things lightly. We went out of the way to try to, you know, really assess and understand the significance of the change and to do the groundwork and, you know, by persuasion and logic, indicate to the person proposing why we were doing it. And of course, that minimized those objections to our decision. But there were other mechanisms they had for letting their complaints get known, you know, through the weekly notes to Ben Brown. And we were constantly getting little annotated notes over from this lab or that. Well, why did you do that? Or Walter has complained about that decision. Would you give me the facts and details?
Horserman
or others, and
yeah.
It came hard for them. But again, I think the fact that it did was a healthy situation. I'm not in any way saying this is bad, because I'm telling you, it gave us a, it put the pressure on us to really think a thing through. Now, a contractor, you know, they are under contract, and if they overrun, I mean, you know, that's a bad thing. And I think your dollars and your schedule was slanted a little bit in favor of the, you know, just the programmatic side of it, more so than the technical. Now, that's not to say that they would take undue risk. They were responsible people. But I think the contract, you know, the dollar motive, the desire not to have an overrun in the contract and to get a good return on the value of the contract, was a little bit stronger there. That influence was stronger there than it was here. I think we were more tended that we want a successful job within the dollars. And these two really complemented each other. And it was painful, but once you got through the process, I think you had that right balance. And it was a very healthy situation.